Oh, that's a good art.
Timothy Webby is a Tamaki-based multidisciplinary artist, primarily working within photography. In his current exhibition, Chemistry, on at Coastal Signs, Webby presents works alongside artist Emma McIntyre, in which Webby showcases a body of silver gelatin prints, capturing these intimate moments that offer a glimpse into a kind of beauty. Webby utilizes a method of hand-coloring the silver gelatin prints, creating this uniquely beautiful image that pulls the image both back into itself as well as away from itself and into a painterly like abstraction, inserting sweeping movements of colour and texture into the captured image, offering moments of connection between Webby and McIntyre's respective practices, moments of linkage, response and chemistry. I caught up with Timothy Webby about the show and overall practice. Would you like to start off by introducing yourself and your overall practice a little bit?
Kia ora, my name's Timothy Webby. I'm an artist born in Auckland and I still live in Auckland, and I currently work in photography, but I didn't always. People be liking the photography more, so I stick with it.
Sweet. And within your current exhibition, Chemistry at Coastal Signs, you show a series of silver gelatin prints alongside works by artist Emma McIntyre. I'd like to start this conversation off by speaking a bit to how the specific body of work gained its momentum. Did this series come off the back of another project or kind of find its footing with something new?
Well, it's not a project with a really obvious conceptual starting point. Mm. It's more works that I've made that we chose for the exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to ask the curator, really. But the body of work, they're all silver gelatin prints, so 35mm film.
Mm.
And then they're starting off black and white, but they're being coloured. But you've got some stage photos in there as well as candid photographs.
Yeah.
It is quite mixed.
Yeah.
I'm feeling like it's quite mixed.
Yeah. Did they all come from like a range of different projects like over the years, or like one past project?
A range. Like I would say that they're individual ideas really. Like you've got the nude shoot of the female nude. That's just an idea where I thought, God, I'd love to photograph a female nude.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like I talked to a friend who agreed that she would like pose, and then so that was just its own little thing.
So they all speak to individual projects with their own kind of encompassing or wider theme or per se.
Yeah, I feel like it is very mixed, but that's correct. Yeah, it's very mixed, but it's all my Tim Webby sort of like brush of sort of colourful sadness. But yeah, so they're not one specific project, but I do think that the way I approach taking photos is got something to do with New Zealand Gothic, but broader than that, probably like just fantasies and settings that I find appealing. And like often I think that starts with like basically a cliche, or like it doesn't come to me as a cliche, but I do find that the cliches like that you see there is an abandoned house photo that she's got in the office, like that's a cliche to me, but not to be pretentious, but it makes me think of the way that jazz musicians, like you start with a standard and you work from that, and it's more about the enjoyment than it is about doing something different figuratively. Like I'm not trying to say something specific, but I would say that it's all quite sort of slightly alternative culture as well. Like, not crazy, but like a little bit. Like, there's drugs, there's nudity. I don't want the work to be super alternative, but I do think that my lifestyle might be slightly as an artist, and I think that's the special spice and the special sauce.
Yeah, and it kind of finds its way in, creeps into your artistic, your project.
Mm.
How does it feel? Because they didn't start off as this one project, and Sarah kind of curated them and brought them into the space. Now seeing them in that room all together, does it change the way you look at them, or maybe form connections that you maybe wouldn't have seen in that work before? If that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it did worry me a bit in terms of like being in not a solo show where it's not exactly just one project, because it kind of makes you feel like a bit of a phony, I feel, because you just got these things and they're not necessarily about something specific.
Mm.
But there's a little curiosity thing. I think there's a weird, if I could say, like, exoticism thing about, like, animals and people and places and little curiosities and, yeah, something there.
Yeah, lovely. And I'd like to switch a little bit to the creative process itself. These are silver gelatin prints. How did you get into this quite tedious project? And do you want to speak a little bit to the process itself?
Yeah, so I used to try and paint. I think I'm quite fussy. When I became a high school teacher, also super difficult to do painting around that. Even though I'm a painting teacher, difficult to find the time and the space, I think.
And maybe because it's now associated with, I don't know, you're already putting that energy into that other space.
Work. And, like, photography was easy to just pop in and do a little something, develop a film or do a shoot or print one photo, like, it's just kind of, and it also, it's appealing, like. So I also have tried to use digital photography and colour photography without much, people not loving it. I think the process of, like, shooting 35mm film, ending up with a negative, printing a contact sheet, seeing which ones you like, printing the ones that you like small, and then gradually working bigger, it just literally makes you make, like, art photography, because, like, otherwise could be something else. It could be, it could have another purpose. But I guess it makes you just think, what is art photography? What are the subjects of art photography? And I think, yeah, that vintage process, like, it just makes you good at art somehow. Like, because, yeah.
Yeah, also, I don't know if this is right, but maybe since photographs are, like, I don't know, everyone's got a phone, everyone's got, do you know what I mean? Like, that digital photography is maybe a lot more, like, widely available and used. So it's, like, by pulling it back to those kind of more analog processes that is, like, inherently got that more, like, artistic linkage. People are really interested in that.
I mean, yeah, and print it out. Like, if you were going to print out a photo from your phone, it's already, like, well, what one do you print out? And then it's like, you could do your family members, but if you're making art, the audience doesn't know the person. So I don't really photograph people much, like, for that reason, because I don't like, it doesn't feel decorative to me, that thing of, like, maybe I know the person, maybe you don't. Like, I don't really like that, but...
Yeah. And some of the photographs you've already kind of spoken about a little bit utilise the incorporation of colour, which from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, is quite unusual for silver gelatin prints, but this use of colour offers this really uniquely beautiful layered and almost textural elements to the prints themselves, both bringing the image back into itself, but, like, also into a kind of abstraction. Do you want to speak a bit to this use of colour?
I like the way you said that, because it is, like, this inside-out way of making the subject of the picture what it's meant to be. But it's inside-out because first it's black and white. And I do think choosing things that look good in black and white first is a process in itself. Like, a lot of, like, I'd love to be photographing native bush, but in black and white it's tough. It kind of looks like a mess, and it's also not green, which is the main thing. So first going black and white and then bringing it back, I don't know, it just feels like you're really getting to the essential source of what the subject can be as a print, I don't know, in an inside-out way.
Yeah, it's quite, because we're so used to seeing, like, images in colour all the time, and then, yeah, through that process you're removing it from its, like, context or maybe its thing, and then, then bringing it back with the colour, bringing it closer to its original form, but then also, like, not, like, it's also, like, pulling it in the other direction. Because I'm not that familiar with photography. How do you apply the colour?
It's called the Colorvia colouring kit. It is very rare. Like, I don't think it's made anymore. I found it at a high school I work at.
Okay.
My Takari College.
Yeah.
And it's real beautiful. So you got dyes, which it's basically, like, diluting raro, making raro, like, you just dilute it. So there's dyes which dye the paper, and then there's toners which tone the black image.
Okay,
so the toners are quite vicious chemicals like bleaches and things. And they will, I will run out eventually. And I don't know what.
Yeah, so you colour the paper first without the image on it?
No. You print the picture and then you can paint this dye on, or you can submerse it in dye, or tone it. I think you have to do it the other way around. I think it's toning and then dyeing.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Do you paintbrush?
Yep, paintbrush. Masking fluid. Like, I think the trick that I love is, like, you put down masking fluid on the areas that you don't want coloured and then just, like, submerse it, and then you get this, like, really strong layer of colour, but then it's not in the areas you want. And you can splatter on the masking fluid, or you can paint it specifically, or...
Yeah. Oh, wow. So quite painterly and quite...
Can be.
Maybe a bit, like, a lack of control in some sense. Quite,
yeah, and limited, I feel. I like, the limitations are the... That's where the creative part is, I think, in a way, because then you don't have too many options, and that actually is helpful.
Yeah, sometimes you need limitations to really kind of to push against or to
get an idea.
Yeah, like. And speaking about this kind of colour painterly, the thing that's happening, it speaks so well to Emma's paintings and drawings on the opposite side of the wall. I was going to ask if you kind of made it in response to Emma's paintings, but have yet found out that this project wasn't. But I don't know, do you, maybe in retrospect, can you see that kind of relation and that bouncing between that painterly kind of approach?
Yeah, I mean, I do. I actually did think about that. There's a yellow canary one where it's like a print of a canary cage. And then I've used masking fluid and splatters, and then I've, but when I printed the photo, I had this, like, netting down, which was cage-like. And I was thinking about Emma McIntyre's paintings there, because I think it's this thing of, like, you do one thing and then you kind of fix it or do another thing, and then a problem might show up, and then your answer to that problem, like, if it's a bit cold, you maybe it needs a little bit of orange, or, you know what I mean? Like, just your answers and fixes to the issues are actually what makes a nice, like, outcome.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a similarity there with her work, where she's just, each painting is a thing of its own. She's working on, like, not a surface level, but like a visual level of, like, let's add this, let's add this. When do you stop? What happens if I overlap? What happens if I keep things separate? That sort of thing. Just sort of simple stuff, those caveman stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think they work so lovely in the space together, and really, there's a beautiful bouncing off of colours and also forms, I feel like, kind of. And also maybe your work maybe brings out certain imagery in her. You know, when things are placed maybe in relation, you kind of notice things that you maybe wouldn't. Yeah, and maybe it brings your work more into a place of abstraction by having them in relation to hers. I think it's a really, really lovely pairing. Mm-hmm. And I also wanted to touch on the installation of your works. They roughly follow the straight line across the large back wall of the gallery, but not quite. There's these really beautiful moments of disruption, variations to the straight line. There's also this variation within the presentation of each print, some framed, others bound to the wall with delicate nails, and some holding on by the means of little clips. Do you want to speak a little bit to this choice of install and this kind of disruption to the straight line and kind of means of presentation?
Yeah. I think this system is vaguely that we've framed some, and choosing which ones to frame wasn't totally obvious. It's not about which ones we're going to sell, because we want to sell the ones that are unframed. I think it's maybe the ones that are, to me, it's like the ones that are a bit more monumental or something, and like less experimental.
Yeah.
And so then I think the install is like, we've kind of put the framed ones up, and then we've included pinned and clipped ones around them in sort of clusters. And sometimes you've even got a duplicate. Like, you might have a framed one that's coloured and then a duplicate that's not. The framing thing is a trauma to me with exhibiting photographs.
Yeah.
Because it's too sad. Like, it's just wildly expensive, particularly when they get large. And it puts pressure, I feel like. This is awkward, but like, I feel like it puts pressure on the relationship between you and the gallerist. Maybe I'm overconscious about that. But then if you've got a gallery that was happy with you clipping a picture or being sensitive to the way that you actually present the work, then it feels fine. Like I feel like Coastal Signs, the way that she received my work was so lovely. Like she was, yeah, it was protected with the clips, but it was still natural to the way that I just hang them in my bedroom like that as I make them. I clip them and pin them and things.
And this kind of, was there a consideration for not the full straight line?
Yeah, I think each body of work has a different level of preppiness or grunginess, and so when you're installing, you've got to be sensitive to that. But you sometimes want the works to speak together to each other. Sometimes you don't. You can see pretty quickly, I think, when things don't go well together or when it becomes like bumpy, like when it's like there's too much going on in a series. But when it's right, they bring each other out well. There's like a fishy, watery thing that seemed to come out in my work and then also kind of in Emma's a bit. And that's why I think we put the water lilies next to her blue painting.
And lastly, what are your hopes for viewers as they engage with this body of work?
I just want to make art that's not boring, and I also want it to not just be for people that are interested in art.
Yeah.
I'm a person who's interested in art. The art needs to be, like, for fun and for looking at. And so sometimes I want it to be, like, shocking or, just out of interest. But I always want it to be beautiful, and I think it is hard when you think, what is the thing that I really think of as beautiful in this world? It's actually a hard thing to answer.
Yeah.
Something that's untethered to anything practical that you care about and something that you could share with others, something that you think is beautiful but that other people also think is beautiful. When you find your little niche of what that is, it's like fun to go deeper and deeper into that. And I want to go deeper into that.
Yes, wonderful. Anything else you wanted to add?
I would like to plug my other show. It's a solo show at Laurie Payne Gallery in Hamilton. It's a very special show to me. I've used my granddad's photos that he took in 1940 around. It's about 12 photographs and some sculptures, I think. Have a look at that if you're in Hamilton or going down south.
That was Timothy Webby speaking to me about his work in chemistry, which also includes work by Emma McIntyre, and is on at Coastal Signs until the 29th of November.